Good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's good to have you all with us here on The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. So before we jump into our program today, which is about equity and development and transportation in our community, I want to remind you that you have a voice in that. And one of those ways you have a voice is voting here in this election coming up. We are beginning today. Today's Thursday, and this is the opening day of early voting. So I want to encourage everybody. You can go to the website, just marylandstate.gov, and see where the locations are in Baltimore for early voting and around Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, and all our listening area. There's places you can go to register to vote today from this morning until 5 o'clock this evening. Remember, when you go to vote, if you do early voting and you're not registered, you can register there on the spot and vote. And remember, all of our brothers and sisters who have been guests of the state are now home free, that you can vote. The law has passed. You can vote. So take your ID, go down to the registration place, to the polling places, get your voter ID card, get your voter registration card, and you can vote on the same exact moment. Register and vote today in early voting. Take advantage of it. Beat the lines next on Tuesday, a week from Tuesday, and vote. Early voting is here. Go vote. You can also get information on it all at WEAA.org, but go vote and make your voice heard. Okay, we're telling you about throughout the day because this is a very important election in the city, around the state, and around the country. So get out there and let your voice be heard. So we have covered this issue before on the Mark Steiner Show numerous times on on the development of bikes, bicycle lanes, and bike sharing in Baltimore City. And we have raised the issues in all those shows about the question of equity and where do we have the bike share program. Original shows we had were a debate over why the bike share program was given to an out-of-the-country company. We had that debate on here a couple of times on the show, but it is now a fait accompli in our city, so that's where it is. But the question is, where do we put these bike shares? Why are they in certain places? And one of the people who has been pushing that as a guest on our program this morning, he'll be here in a moment, is Dr. Lawrence Brown. On his Facebook site, Brace, he has delineated in maps and discussions and articles, questions that were raised about all this. So we invited the folks from Bike More to join us. They couldn't make it today, but we have a really interesting roundtable of guests. Let me introduce them to you and have you all call us here at 410-319-8888. Or you can email us at talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join us. We are here in the studio with Celeste Chavis. Dr. Chavis is an assistant professor in the Department of Transportation and Urban Infrastructure Studies in the School of Engineering here at Morgan State University, a member of the Institute for Transportation Engineers, and a member of the Paratransit Committee of the Transportation Research Board. And Celeste, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Verona Macbeth is with us, Transit Bureau Chief for the Department of Baltimore City's Department of Transportation. She heads the Department of Transportation area that's responsible for bringing bike share and all the new bike lanes in Baltimore City. Veronica, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having
me. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. And I will say, I've used that Maryland Avenue. It's incredible to see that thing take hold in Baltimore and actually have a serious bike track lane two ways that can be maybe begin to change the heart of the city. I know it took a lot to get there. So why don't you just begin, before Lawrence gets here, to talk a bit about that opening of that lane.
excuse me. I've been with the city now for just coming on 3 years, and so that's basically been an ongoing project for the entire breadth of my time within the city and even a little bit before. I've worked heavily with Caitlin Doolin, who's our bike planner, and also kind of within our agency, making sure that we kind of met all the necessary criteria to try to make that one of the longest and most safest stretches for a protected bike lane that goes throughout the city. This summer, we've made great strides in getting the bulk of it done. And so we look forward to its final completion, and so that, you know, citizens can ride safely and that, you know, both cyclists are safe and drivers are safe as well as we move throughout the city on bikes.
So what's your initial thought, Celeste?
I think it's great. I took my first stroll on it about a week ago. It's definitely a much safer experience for cyclists. I think having more facilities like that would encourage more cycling. It's a good way to be introduced to cycling in a safe environment.
So, you know, one of the things I remember the discussions we had in this program maybe 5 years ago when we were going to open a bike lane on Monroe Street, and there was a lot of confusion in the community about who supported what and why that, and the bike lane was actually eventually shut down and torn up, and I think there was a lot of people kind of confusion inside the community and debates inside the community, and people are using that, some people are using that, not saying DOT is, but some people are using that for an argument why bike lanes are not in communities like on Monroe Street. Let's talk a bit about that. And Lawrence, welcome, good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Always good to be here.
Appreciate you getting up for us.
Hey. Joy cometh in the morning.
Just tell yourself that over and over again,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do.
So the question, I think, really, what begs the question here is whether it is the bike share program or where we're beginning to build the lanes is always a question of equity, which is what we debated and you debated on the show many times over Port Covington and the question of equity and development. So talk a bit about that. I mean, that to me seems to be at the heart of this. And folks, call in. I mean, I'm very curious. The stats show us that the largest single use of bicycles and cycling in Baltimore City is in black working class communities, which is really significant. And when you look at where the bike share program is and at transportation hubs in Baltimore, and the one transportation hub where it's not is the transportation hub at Mondawmin, which is where subway and buses all kind of converge, and there's no bike share program or bike lanes in that community. The question is, so talk a bit about that. I mean, you've been really railing about this on Brace, which is the Facebook page that you created.
And I would like to elaborate and say that BRACE stands for Baltimore Redevelopment Action Coalition for Empowerment, which is a nonprofit in the Middle East founded by people who were displaced by Johns Hopkins. And so this question of equity, Johns Hopkins via EBDI, East Baltimore Development Incorporated. So this question of equity is something that's very important because Baltimore is in the top 8 hyper-segregated cities. And I'm not an expert on transportation, but I am an expert on segregation. And what was stunning to see that just a year after the uprising on April 27, 2015, that we're still making inequitable decisions. We're creating inequitable segregating transit systems that impose significant amount of transit detention for people who have to travel more than 45 minutes to get to work. And the communities that have the most people with no vehicles are the ones that don't have bike lanes, don't have bike racks, and don't have the biking infrastructure so that they can get to the jobs that are either in near the harbor or even further out in a lot of our outlying areas around the city where we need rapid transit, rapid rail. And so it's disheartening to see the concentration of our transit resources in the white L, in our disproportionately white neighborhoods in the city. And so I began to just talk about this because it was stunning to see whether it was bike share, the bicycle surveys, the bike lanes, or the bike racks. Every biking indicator you could find and put it on a map is concentrated in the area where the people have the most and not in the areas where people need it the greatest. So I was just, you know, I'm curious to find out why the Department of Transportation and biking advocates in this city have not planned adequately for equity.
Do you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, Veronica? I'm happy to jump in. Hi, Lawrence. I'm Veronica. Good to meet you.
Hello.
I would say probably almost the exact opposite. We did plan for equity. That was probably at the forefront of us even taking on this venture. I started the third iteration of trying to get bike share to Baltimore. There were two other attempts that did not work out well due to some other financial issues with the companies that they were working with. So this is the third iteration, and I'm happy to say I'm going to start on a really positive note, is that we launched tomorrow. So we made great strides in trying to make this program a reality, and it will be realized tomorrow as we launch bike share for the first time in Baltimore City, starting downtown tomorrow at 10 a.m. But that being said, I do want to kind of challenge the fact a little bit that equity was not a consideration when it was one of our primary considerations. We recognize how this city is divided by transportation, by where it is located and also where it's not located. That being said, it's not a realistic or fair expectation to think that one form of transportation is going to completely obliterate or bail out a city that still has always had transportation challenges. So that being said, we are trying to be a supplement to what is a multimodal and accessible city. And when you have a bike share system, one of the things you have to look at, unless you come out with someone saying, here's $50 million, put them everywhere. That wasn't the case. This was hard-earned and hard-fought-for money that came from both the general fund, that came from federal funding that we applied for, that came from state funding. And so as such, you have to try to do the best to allocate your resources, one, reflecting the diversity of the city and making sure you're creating accessibility for people who would not otherwise be able to get to the system, and two, plan ahead for that if you're not able to directly institute that diverse area right then and there at the first phase of the program, know that it's built in for subsequent phases that are happening in the near future. So in some subsequent phases, no, we're not at every single area that you would deem a Black neighborhood or a non-Black neighborhood, but we're in the process of making moves. You can take a look at our maps on Be More Bike Share and take a look at where our 20 stations that'll be launching as of tomorrow will be there. And then as we move towards the spring, where we'll have total 50 stations, we've done things in partnership with MTA, with the North Avenue Rising Project, where we just secured $10 million in federal funding. $400,000 of that are for bike share, bike lane improvements that will go in that particular area. We're working on a project next year that is a $600,000 grant we got from the state for West Baltimore Bike Boulevard that will help with bike infrastructure and safe travel in areas that notably don't have those type of accessibilities at this time.
So the question is, I guess, I think the heart of what you were asking, Lawrence, and please jump in here, Celeste, I think I was excited when I heard Bike Share was coming to Baltimore, mm-hmm. and they were building these bike lanes, had this plan. But the question is, how decisions were made about where to put the initial bike share? Was it the city made those decisions? Was it the private corporation who owns this system that made these decisions? And why a major hub like Mondawmin, as for example, was left out of the bike share program?
So I can kind of give you a very brief, I guess, version of the rundown of how the station locations were determined and decided. That being said, we went to the public. We have been online with an active website for almost the better part of 9 months. There were public meetings that were publicly announced. We had activity on our website at first, just the DOT website, and then more specifically on the bike share website. Public awareness surveys were taken asking for station location suggestions. Had over 5,000 suggestions that were made by citizens here, several hundred survey responses. And then we went into the communities. We went into West Baltimore. We went into Central Baltimore, East Baltimore, and South Baltimore to engage the community about where they would like to see stations. So with any system, as I stated before, you have to have a really initial primary phase one installation. And so in doing that, sometimes you have to plan around what would be, I would say, some kind of predictable places that you know that the stations will be immediately successful. But then also it's the engagement and kind of compilation of sponsorship too. So if, say, company AB sponsors a station that is in the Inner Harbor, now the Department of Transportation does not have to pay for that station. We can take those funds and put them in a station that would be maybe in a less utilized location, which is actually what we have done.
Celeste?
Yeah, I would echo everything Veronica said. So bike share locations is kind of a function of keeping the optimal density. If they're too far apart, they won't be used. So you have to have bike shares that are pretty close together in a walkable scale. So given that the phase one only has about 50 bike share stations, that really limits the coverage area that the first phase could cover. I know for the committee, one thing that was important was safety. If we were to put a bike share station somewhere, we wanted to be in a place where there was safe space to ride. And so we actually had discussed Mondawmin quite a bit. And what we determined was right now, there's not really a safe place to ride. And the last thing we want to do is put in infrastructure that can harm the public. So It's a tough decision with very limited resources, and to think about the phasing out process, we really started small with the intent of expanding outward.
Lawrence?
I don't know. I think, you know, safety, for that to be a reason, that means there should be no bus station at Mondawmin. We shouldn't have any transit at Mondawmin. If safety is going to be the reason, then that's a reason you could exclude any Black neighborhood.
No,
disinvested.
No, can we?
I'm not interrupting you, so if you would please allow me to continue. You know, so we can post community-oriented police that could police the area if that was a concern, but I just find that reason to be insufficient. Now, as it relates to bike share, there are 50 stations, as was mentioned earlier. 41 of those are inside of the White L, 41 out of 50. So that's a 92% rate of our bike share stations that are in the White L when this is a 63% African-American city. One of those stations that's outside of the White L, I mean, is at Johns Hopkins Hospital. So that makes 42 that are in or near white neighborhoods or white-controlled institutions or historically segregating institutions. And then four of those are in close proximity to University of Maryland, another historically segregating institution. So when you look at the first 50, and you have five near historically segregating institutions, Hopkins in Maryland, 41 in the White L, that's 46 out of the first 50 stations that are in the White L or near historically segregating institutions. So I wouldn't have a problem if, you know, these arguments about density and safety and all these type of things, you know, I hear a sort of straw man argument that somehow I'm arguing that these biking stations should solve all of the transit inequities in Baltimore's history. That's not what I'm arguing at all. But what I am arguing is that it shouldn't intensify Baltimore's transit apartheid. And in fact, when you have 47 out of the 50 or 46 out of the 50 first stations that will be in the white neighborhoods in our city, that is intensifying our transit apartheid. And I think that's completely unacceptable. To be a year after the uprising, all the things we say we've learned in this city, to be putting together transit systems that intensify the issues that we have in East and West Baltimore, I think it's just completely unacceptable, with all due respect to the ladies over here.
Celeste?
So what I meant by safety, for clarification, it had nothing to do with crime or policing. I'm talking about a safe place to bike. And when we define a safe place to bike, it means where the bicyclist is protected from vehicular traffic. And so at a location where there is a high amount of vehicular traffic and a high amount of large buses, that makes it increasingly dangerous for a cyclist. And so the committee felt that it would be irresponsible to put a bike share at that location where you have a lot of big vehicles, a lot of traffic, without the adequate infrastructure such as bike lanes in place currently. And the way the planning works is project has been going on for years, so it's really hard to say, okay, we should put in a bike lane and install the bike share. Those are two separate conversations with the way the DOT has been set up.
Yeah, and so just to chime in from there, though, there's...
I have a question, though. Okay. I mean mm-hmm. so when we talk about safety, and I just pick up on what you all were saying, what Lawrence was saying, I know we harp on Mondawmin just because it's such a transportation hub for the city, right?
Right.
It was also where the center of things happened when somebody shut down the transportation system when the schools let out right after Fred Gray was killed, and we still don't know who actually did that.
Sure.
That has not been, nobody has come up and said, I'm the person who did this and made this decision. But how is that area any less trafficked and dangerous than traffic going up and down St. Paul Street or Charles Street or any of the other streets we have going north and south in Baltimore, or going from Johns Hopkins University trying to get from there down Monument Street to the center of the city where traffic is intense? So how is that any more or less intense than the traffic at Mondawmin?
So I think part of that is, and I just wanted to just, I am going to dig back just a little bit to some statistics that were given that I don't believe were accurate as far as where the stations are located. 9 of the 50 stations, which is about 18%, are in median income areas where 200% of federal poverty level or lower, and almost half, at about 40% of the stations, are located in census tract areas that earn less than the Baltimore average income, which is a household income of 38%. So to look at, again, I'm not trying to mutually exclude this as a race-based issue, but diversity-wise, our stations are in very diverse areas. But to speak to the safety components of what you're asking, infrastructure is paramount in all of this. You know, in a perfect world, we would have the bicycle infrastructure to support bicycle bike share in every part of the city, whether you're your own bike rider and you have your own bike, you're a novice or you're an expert. But the caveat is that you have certain areas that when there are repairs and roads being worked on, now we have an internal protocol that we review any kind of street project that it's going to be going on for possibilities of improvement. So now we spend time looking at all the road work that's happening throughout the city to see if that there is an opportunity to make infrastructure improvements. In turn, speaking that if we can make bike lanes, bike sharrows, and different things like that, whether they be protected or flow or contraflow lanes within the traffic. But it matters because, yes, we would put a bike share station at Mondawmin, but there's no, like as in Dr. Chavis is saying, there's no true safe infrastructure for a cyclist to get in there. So if you have someone who's a mid-level rider, you have the opportunity to ride in the street, but it may not be at the most comfort level. So you try to get in places, and we try to work in places where we can begin to incorporate additional bicycle infrastructure.
But I guess the question, who's calling in here? We'll get you folks in. So Ray, we're going to get you after the break. But I think the question is, when we make these plans, and I'll let Lawrence jump in, but when we make these plans, I didn't answer the question about traffic flow. I mean, I can't think of any more intense traffic in the city than in the center of the city. Mm-hmm. I don't like driving through the city on a bicycle because going down Druid Park Drive is scary on your bike when all these things are whizzing around. I'll leave that to my producers who are younger. They can do that. I'm not doing that right now. But the issue is, why in the plannings does it always seem like whenever it happens, we plan in the center of the city, but never plan in communities around us, like an experimental station that might go at Liberty Heights and Garrison or Gwin Oak and Liberty Heights? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it always seems to be done in the center of the city.
I think I wouldn't say that it's intentionally done in the center of the city. I think one of the components that helps us look at why we would do things in the center of the city as far as kind of a starting point. Bike share is something that is going to be revenue driven. It's supposed to be a self-sufficient program. And so if you want it to be in other parts of the city, that means it has to start in a part of the city where you know that you may have some pretty regular usage. It's not saying that it's not right to be in other parts of the city, but you have to have a starting point essentially. And so in having that starting point, and you know that you're going to have perhaps a more revenue driven area that can help eventually sustain stations in other areas like Mondawmin, like places like North Avenue, other additional places that you might have mentioned that there are no stations at this point in time, but there definitely will be, that you want sustainability. You need financial sustainability in order to do that, to have these stations in the outer areas from the city.
So we have to take a short break. I'm going to come back. Lawrence, please pick up. And folks, 410-319-8888. Ray, you are the first caller up. We have tweets in for Theodore Bracey. We'll read the tweets coming in from Theodore as well. 410-319-8888. Do you ride a bike? What's it like in your neighborhood? Tell us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks, to the Mark Steiner Show, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Before we jump back into our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ Baltimore's credit union is helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So we're talking about bike share and where these biking lanes are going and how they're being used. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can comment on our Facebook page or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. As we talk with Dr. Lawrence Brown, public health consultant and community advocate, assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University, Dr. Celeste Chavis, who is a assistant professor in the Department of Transportation and Urban Infrastructure Studies at the School of Engineering here at Morgan State University, Veronica McBeth, who is Transit Bureau Chief for the Maryland City Department of Transportation, where she heads the division that is responsible for bringing bike share and all the new bike lanes to Baltimore City. And you all are 410-319-8888. We lost Ray. Tom, you're going to come to your call in 1 minute, but Ray, do call back. But you were going to comment before we went to break. Dr. Lawrence Brown.
And again, I just want to emphasize, you know, I'm not in a argument with any of the people in the studio. That's really not what this is about.
Right.
You know, my argument is really more so around, like, how do we dismantle Baltimore apartheid? How do we desegregate our city? And so I think some people conjecture that my argument is based on people's intentions. And you can have good intentions but still create segregative apartheid system. So I'm not looking at intentions. What I'm looking at is the result. And I think when we talk about equity, we have to be clear. Equity means the most to the least. It means for those who've been oppressed that we make the most effort at investing resources so that they're brought up to par with those who have been structurally advantaged. And so I'm hearing everything but equity in the discussion. Equity means, well, let's create a protected bike lane on Liberty Heights Road so that it does become a protected, safe place for people to ride on the streets and not have to feel harassed or endangered by car traffic. You know, equity means, you know, how do we find the funding? Because if businesses aren't donating because there isn't the same amount of volume of business maybe near Montgomery as there is in the harbor, then what do we need to do to help compensate for the lack of capital to help create the biking infrastructure in places like that? And so I think that's what equity means, the most to the least. And the thing that really concerns me about the way that these stations were decided, when I look at page 10 of the 2015 Bike Master Plan, of this version that I have, the Department of Transportation conducted triannual bicycle counts at 9 locations, and all 9 of those locations were in the White L. And so if all of your counts for bicycle counts are in places where there's already structural advantage, then of course you're going to miss the bicycle ridership that exists outside in the black butterflies, I like to call it, our black neighborhoods that are in our city. So it was easy for me to see why and how this happened, because if you look on page 8 of the Bicycle Master Plan, the surveys that they received the most are in a perfect L, the zip codes where they received their survey respondents. So if I was, you know, administering surveys and I saw, wait a minute, we're only getting them from the structurally advantaged parts of our city, we need to switch our methodology. We need to go door to door. We need to do whatever we need to do to help elicit the input from different parts of the city that are historically disinvested.
All right, so let me ask you that question before we go to the phones. I'll come right back to you, Veronica. I mean, that to me seems a fairly logical argument about how we have to kind of rethink,
of course,
how we develop the city and who gets asked what.
Exactly. I think that public engagement is an important component of all transportation, and how you do the public engagement is critical. So the question is, okay, if this is where the surveys were largely respondents came from, why is that, and how do we reach out more? So that's why they did community outreach meetings in like West Baltimore and other places, because they did recognize that most of the surveys respondents came from the central part of the city. We can certainly discuss ways that we can better use maybe community groups and advocacy groups to provide the voice. But I think that just showing the map of where the respondents came from is a function of the fact that it was an online survey. But I think that the people who were looking at the results of the survey recognized the bias, and they didn't take the survey as this is 100% truth and we're going to follow the recommendations of just these people who responded. That's why they made a technical advisory committee to bring in other people from outside of those regions to provide a voice to maybe people in locations that weren't necessarily represented in the survey.
But, well, I'm going to open the phones here, but I guess, but it seems though that whenever we do things in Baltimore, that we end up, whether it's a development or putting development dollars into things or thinking about where stuff goes, is the White L. It was created by Lawrence Brown. I mean, he had this idea that the predominantly white and affluent neighborhoods from North Baltimore straight on down to the harbor,
right,
and then you go east
Yeah, there's some strong historical trends.
And that the butterfly being the East and West Side neighborhoods that surround, as you call them, the black butterfly that surrounds the rest of the city, that kind of development doesn't take place. I mean, I think about when I went down North Avenue, I mean, went down Maryland Avenue, my thought was, what would happen if we really thought about creating a bike lane from the east to the west side on both sides of the street with bike share programs that went up down North Avenue that connects the west black west side to the east west side and the center city that everybody can use.
And that's part of the plan. So I mentioned earlier the North Avenue Rising Tiger grant that the city just won. It's a $10 million grant that basically is to completely reinvigorate and rejuvenate the North Avenue area. Part of that grant funding is about $400,000 exclusively for bike share and bike infrastructure, also including bike lanes that would also go down the length of North Avenue, and bike share stations at both Penn North and North Avenue subway stations. So the acts are there. The opportunities are there. We're trying to make the efforts to do those things, but that's one of those things. I will have to say to you, though, that it's not that every area doesn't get an opportunity to be looked at. I mean, as we always know, that money is kind of the ruler of things in that particular sense. Bike infrastructure is very fairly cheap to put in, but it's also looking at budgetary constraints as far as being budgeted and including in it. We work very hard in my division to fight for additional funding to make sure that we can incorporate more and new bike infrastructure in the city. We're not doing a terrible job, just to give you an idea. In about 8 months, we're going to surpass both DC and Pittsburgh in bike lane miles, for protected bike lane miles. Both cities have immense notoriety for their bike infrastructure, their bike share systems, and we are now starting to run with the big dogs. It may not look like it's all there, but everything is falling into place. DC was just recently ranked number one as one of the most bikeable cities. Just last year, or a year and a half ago, Baltimore City was awarded a bike-friendly city award, a bronze status. It's not an easy award to receive. We're aiming for silver status in the next year or so. So, I mean, we're trying and making great strides.
No. I think that what Lawrence was saying earlier, let me put words in your mouth, Lawrence, but you're not, I mean, which I could never do anyway, but not saying that this is not vilifying the work that you are trying to do so much as really probing why equity is not the central part of any planning we do in a city like Baltimore. I think that's what your argument is.
Right.
So let me go ahead.
I was just say one thing is planning, unfortunately, is not centralized in the city either. So the efforts that are being done at Bike Share may be different than the efforts being done at other agencies as well. And I just wanted to say one thing about the DC Bike Share, because that's kind of our closest example of a good bike share. That bike share has 400 stations. Our first phase of Baltimore's, including phase 1A and 1B, will have a total of 50 stations. So just to provide some scope to the scale. So
let me open the phones here and also read Theodore's tweet. Theodore Bracey tweeted in, the city needs to promote bike lanes in every community, like I see in Philadelphia, not just Harbor East. 410-319-8888, and Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, folks.
Good morning,
my name
Tom.
Is Tom. I live at the 900 block of Cathedral Street. And there's a newly constructed bike station right in front of the apartment building I live in. And the previously two southbound lanes on Cathedral Street have been reduced to one. And a couple of points I'd like to make is the neighborhood where I live in is fairly prosperous. Perhaps the demographics are a little bit skewed because there are some low-income high-rises nearby, but they're mostly elderly people, which are probably unlikely to use bicycles. Also, to the reduction to one travel lane now seems to restrict the access of emergency vehicles. When the emergency vehicles previously came down Cathedral Street, traffic could move to one lane or the other to let them by, but that can't happen anymore. Also, the bike lanes have hundreds of pylons up. I'm just wondering how the city is going to be able to plow snow in those areas, because first of all, the bike lanes have pylons to define the center line for the two-way traffic for the bicycles, so snowplows cannot go through there at all.
Okay.
The left center lane now is parking. Of course, during a snow emergency, parking would not be allowed, but there's hundreds of pylons, so it'd be impossible to plow that also. So the only lane that would be able to be plowed from snow would be the travel lane, but I don't know what they're going to do with the snow.
That's a really interesting question. I didn't even thought about that one. DOT think about that one?
excuse me, yes. Yes, we have thought about it. There are different types and different sizes of plows. I'd be lying to you to say that I'm an expert as far as snow plowing, but in the maintenance component. But I do know that there are various sizes of plows. We have been working actually with DPW. They have a small, plow type machine that would fit nicely within our bike lane. So we have talked to them. And so we will have the opportunity not only just to plow the lanes, but also to clean the lanes of debris if it's in there. As far as like plowing the snow on the roads, they should have just as much ability to be able to move and plow the snows off the road. Yes, there are pylons there, which is kind of used to separate traffic from the bike lane in addition, but we're good.
Let me go back to the phone chain. Also, read a piece that just came in from Transcendent Me. You tweeted in a long tweet. 410-319-8888. Leslie, you're on the air. Welcome.
Morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, to me, you know, somebody being disingenuous because it's anytime the brother come on there and raise a concern like that, it's obvious that the conditions exist. You know, and that man, I don't think that gentleman is on there just fabricating things just because he need to get on the radio or anything like that. I think he wouldn't be going through that if it wasn't a real issue that needed to be looked at. In my opinion, you know, because I have been seeing these new bike lanes popping up, especially Maryland Avenue. I heard you mention that.
Right.
You know, I mean, to me, it's obvious, you know, where bike lanes and things like that is being, you know, installed. And it's also obvious where they're not being installed. And I think that, you know, if it was really fair and not so much economically driven, then, you know, you see the subway stations all over the city, wherever they located, then bike lanes should automatically be there just because that's a, you know, subway station, not because it's more economic to put one, you know, in the white area or downtown. You know, Wabash could use a bike lane. Like you said, Montgomery could use a bike infrastructure. But then when the planners get together and they claim that, you know, they have these meetings and stuff like that, you know, and these reach outs, I mean, I never hear about them. You know, and then you got to realize predominantly people in the inner city or, you know, African Americans, because that's what it's all about, black and white. You know, they're not really in tune to internet like that, where they would be, you know, aware of these type of things. And because of other issues that go on primarily in black, you know, communities, they really don't have time for it. You know, so now that gentleman, I think I really applaud that gentleman for bringing that up. But then when you find people to come up and, you know, counteract or try to offset or, you know, say be contrary.
Right.
Where he coming from, the man wouldn't even be doing that if it wasn't an issue, because I'm sure he got other things he would rather be doing.
To be on my show? I don't think so.
And, you know, and the truth of the matter is, fair is fair.
All right, Leslie,
anybody can see fair is fair. And, you know, this whole deal with, like you said, Anthony, you know, they always focusing on downtown and do that. That's obvious that they focusing on downtown. Anything they do uptown is just something to keep that gentleman right there from complaining. But it's obviously.
Leslie, I appreciate the call. We've got to get some other callers. Thanks so much for your input. I want to get to Issa and Alita, who have called in as well, and read this tweet. Transcendent Me tweets in, every time we get something new and innovative in Baltimore, it never starts with the people who need it most. It starts with the privilege and never trickles down. Also, this inability to see that the safety concerns are basically the same. There's nothing different about traffic coming up and down one way to St. Paul, Charles Calvert, etc., with heavy traffic and buses. Like, what argument can make sense when there are a million buses plus the free buses going up and down all day? So the bike lanes that exist are actually trash. He writes more. And Andrew tweeted in, to your caller's concern, I saw an ambulance use the cycle track to bypass traffic last week. It was no problem whatsoever. But Lawrence, you want to chime in before we go back to the phones?
Well, I mean, I just first of all, I appreciate the brother talking about that man. I really appreciate that. This city is 63% African American. nearly two-thirds, and for 90% of our biking infrastructure to be in white neighborhoods, when we should be desegregating our city, when we should be dismantling apartheid, I think that has to change. And, you know, I would hope that the people in the Department of Transportation and other nonprofits would concede the point and say, let's begin to do what needs to be done.
So is the question of how these, of the cost of these things and how it's being paid for, is it because part of it is private dollars that are paying for this?
No.
These are all city.
Are you speaking to as
well,
far
bike share
as
bike is private, bike right?
No, the city owns bike share. We own it. Baltimore
but
City.
But you have a private company that is.
That operates on our behalf, but we own the actual bike share system. We own the docks. We own the bikes.
So and who makes the profit?
The city makes the profit. The agency. The bike share system makes the profit in turn to reinvest right back into bike share, which means the money or revenue that is drawn from it is used to maintain the system, pay the operator, and also expand the system. So that are those are the key factors of what happens with the money that comes into bike share.
So where are the very next bike share stations supposed to be put?
So we have discussions going, early discussions for phase two stations, but that's going to be determine how large the phase two, I guess, installment will be based on how much money that we're able to draw as far as revenue. We have ideas drawn out as to suggested station areas. We have not publicized that because a lot of things are subject to change. But I will go forward and reinforce the fact that equity is paramount and at the top of our list of places to make sure that we are making equitable investments in the community.
So we have a lot of callers. I'm coming right back to Celeste and to Lawrence. Let me just get a couple callers in here. Come right back at 410-319-8888. Issa, you're on the air. Is it Issa or Issa? You're on the air.
Hello?
Issa?
Hello, I'm on here?
Yes, you are.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I think that's an excellent idea in terms of putting the bike lanes on North Avenue. I would love to see people take advantage of that. But in terms of equity, someone says that equity is paramount. I don't think that that's the case at all. In terms of helping the black community, you're not going to have anyone who's genuinely helping the black community unless they work for the black community. The people who are up there from the Department of Transportation, they work for the Department of Transportation, so they're going to be advocating on their behalf. Mark, I challenge you to bring black people up there who specifically work for the black community and are interested in putting programs and resources out there specifically for the black community. As long as you bring people who work for the Department of anything outside of the black community, they're not going to advocate on behalf of the black community. So in terms of equity, that is not paramount in the city at all, and you need more representatives who work specifically for black people. And I don't know the race of the people who's in the studio, but if they're black and they're not speaking on behalf of black people, I think that's a disgrace and a disservice to your people and your ancestors.
Well, he said, thank you. But actually, on this program, we do that all the time, every day. There are community advocates in this program who are fighting for that, which is why Dr. Lawrence Brown is here and why we're having this kind of what I think is hopefully a civil discussion about where we're going. And so I think we do try to do that. 410-319-8888. Lolita, you're on the air.
Cullen Avenue corridor. I mean, I drive that way to go to work. But since they installed those bike lanes, I do not drive down Maryland Avenue anymore. I wonder, first of all, the impact studies that they've done, how it would affect traffic. Because now you have, to me, the parking lane that's on the left side where they put the bike lane on the opposite side of that is a little bit too narrow. And secondly, did y'all consult or inform all the businesses along that corridor that y'all are going to be impacting their business, whether it's positive or negative? Was the business community informed? Was the neighborhood informed? And overall, what kind of transportation impact studies were done in terms of commuters during rush hour traffic from north to south? Those are some questions that I have. And do y'all have any of this published on your website? Do y'all have meetings that's open to the public to let people know what y'all plan on doing? I see that you were very evasive when someone asked you whether or not you were going to do y'all were planning on a bike route that encompassed more of the African-American community. I see that you did not want to answer that directly. I know things are subject to change, but still, you could have given someone a little bit of idea whether or not you guys were even thinking about it or not. And that's all the questions I have, and I will take my answers off the air.
Lily.
and have a great day.
Thank you, ladies. Do you want to say something? You have not chimed in for a minute.
I'll go back to the previous caller, then let Veronica address the most recent one. I think that there are many people in the city all fighting for the same cause. The question is, how do we leverage all these different groups and bring them together to actually create this change that all of us want to see for the city? One very difficult component of transportation just seen in general across the nation is how to really engage the public actively throughout the entire process. So if there are community groups, if there are people who are genuinely interested in bicycling, no matter what community you're from, please reach out to Bike Share. The one thing that I can say from being kind of an outsider who's been actively involved, I'm not representing the Department of Transportation, I'm a professor who's been consulted on certain things, is I do think that they take the feedback provided at heart. So I think that if there are community groups who are really interested in bringing bicycle infrastructure to your neighborhood, just reach out. We would love to help create the voice. I personally would love to help kind of leverage and bring a bunch of voices together. But I think that the first step is to reach out. And of course, part of that ownership is on DOT to do public engagement. But if this is something that people are interested in, I really would encourage to lend a voice and help bring the future phases to where you want to see them.
So I'll jump right back in, Veronica. Just keep it kind of pithy because we have the lines are jammed. People really want to get in on this.
It's great to see.
It's really important that people really want to get in this conversation. So let me just get a couple calls in here and come right back. And we'll all kind of close out here in a minute. I wish we had another hour to do this because people are really calling in. But let's go first to Janice in Washington State. Hi, Janice. Good morning.
Hello?
Is this Janice?
No, this is Kenneth from Baltimore.
Kenneth, go ahead.
I think the guy got me misunderstood. This is Kenneth from Baltimore.
Well, Kenneth, go ahead.
Okay. Well, they put the same thing in front of the Chase House, my building, which is sort of slash senior citizen mixed population. But there's a point I'm trying to make is a lot of those people have to board their buses and stuff in the morning and special need buses and stuff, you know, for wheelchairs, and it makes it hard for them to get, you know, and they cut it down to one lane, you know. And like the lady said, they didn't have any meeting to tell us about this or anything. They just start putting them up. And I think some people get so much privileges and don't tell us about it, you know.
All right, Ken, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you being part of the program. Go ahead, Veronica, very quickly.
I did want to chime in about the community engagement component. Community engagement is a huge part of when you're making planning efforts and actually making infrastructure changes in the city. Just for this project alone, and I speak the project as far as like the Maryland Avenue cycle track, there were three traffic impact studies that were done before the project was given a go-ahead, and there were actually four community engagement meetings that happened in and around the communities that would be affected by this. Additionally, staff from the DOT actually went door-to-door flyering for both businesses and residences, and including mailings that went to various residents there. So the community engagement and outreach efforts have happened and do continue to happen.
Lawrence, do you want to jump in real fast before we try to get a couple calls in before the end of the
hour?
Sure.
I would love to know if any of those four locations included the Chase House or some of those senior facilities that are located in that neighborhood. Sounds like they really wanted to know. And if not, why not? Because it sounds like they're having difficulty getting on their buses and things of that nature. So I just think, again, equity should be the core, the priority, not third on the list or fourth on the list. But, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. That's what my grandmama taught me. And, you know, I think about the way that, you know, people sort of put the onus on residents to come out and engage with the Department of Transportation. We already engaged. We're paying taxes. So we need them we can't make it out to all means. I'm not a transportation guy. I do housing. I do segregation. People want me to run all around. They want people who have jobs to run all around. No, we've paid the taxes. So do what's right. We shouldn't take us pestering and hounding people to get equity in our city.
Let me get a couple of quick calls in here, and I'll let you have a final word here, Veronica. I'm just trying to balance it all out here. 410-319-8888. Very quick thought. Marcus, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to touch on briefly, you know, the revenue base of this program. I mean, if you're only using that as, you know, your basis for where you're going to target these programs. And, I mean, the inner city, that's my opinion, being frank, you know, we're going to be the last on the back burner after more affluent neighborhoods kind of prove that it can be self-sustained. And if that's the case, I mean, it's pretty much who knows when we'll get to the list of getting that infrastructure put in. And the other thing is, once a month they have Baltimore Bike Night, you know, when the summer months and
right.
spring months permit it. And it's a huge turnout. You know, we have all kinds of people from all different backgrounds, all different ethnics and races. So I know that people would love to have this in their community. But again, you know, I didn't hear anything. It wasn't no door to door. I mean, I just saw the lanes up and I'm like, wow, that's cool. I was really interested. But, you know, I don't know. I just like to know if we are going to be a priority or is it going to be after the pilot starts that's already going, prove that it can be self-sustained? Because, I mean, the money really isn't right. there in the communities that's not targeted right now.
Marcus, I appreciate the call. Veronica, we have about a minute and a half left, so let me let you come in and get a final thought.
Okay, just a few final thoughts. I just want to say that when we are talking about revenue received, it's not about people who give us revenue in turn get something back in that specific area. There's a difference between a station sponsorship where someone particularly sponsors a station in one location versus the overall general collection of revenues that we're allowed to use and autonomously decide with the help of our TAC group and also community engagement efforts where the next locations of the stations will go. Again, I want to really push forward the point that, you know, equity is very important. We've done several things that have tried to make equity one of the things that we look at. The fact that a lot of the city is an unbanked population. We're one of the first systems in the United States to launch within a cash option, as in tomorrow, if you wanted to ride bike share and you don't have money, you can go to the transit store and different things like that. So there are options there, and we're engaged with the community, and we will continue to be engaged.
I'm trying to just jump in because we have to go to a news break here, but this has been great. Veronica Macbeth, Transit Bureau Chief for the Baltimore City Department of Transportation. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It's been great having you in the studio. Great to meet you, Dr. Celeste Chavez, who's assistant professor in the Department of Transportation and Urban Infrastructure Studies at the School of Engineering here at Morgan State University. And Dr. Lawrence Brown, as always, always great to have you in the studio with your thoughts and ideas and pushing what needs to be pushed. Assistant professor of public health here at the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. And thank all of you for calling in, writing in, tweeting in, and emailing in this hour of the Mark Steiner Show. We're about to take a quick break. Reminding you, Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association, from school funding to educational issues. Maryland students, parents, and schools can learn more by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. Short news break. We come back with sound bites. Don't go away.